Rach. How you doing?
I'm really great. How are you?
I'm hot now. We just had coffee.
We did.
And I'm hot.
Yeah.
But they were accompanied by brownies that Big One made, and they were delicious.
Your Big One's a winner.
She is.
She's a keeper.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not good for our hips, but that's fine because it's delicious. What's happening, baby?
Don't start with that question. There's never any good answer.
Oh, all right.
Life, what's happening with you?
Okay, this is going to sound really, really ridiculous and a little bit Jane Austen of me.
Yeah.
We got a new water pipe.
Now, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Now, I think it's the most ridiculous thing to mention out loud, but we have lived in this house for 8 years and we have lived with the fact that if someone's in the shower, you can't flush the toilet or wash your hands or fill up a water bottle or fill the kettle. Like, you can only do one thing at once in this house.
Right.
And we've lived with that for 8 years and that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got this letter from the water company saying your water has increased quite significantly. You might want to check to see if you've got a leak.
Sure. Yeah.
So, lo and behold, about 2 litres a minute, I think, was going, like,
oh my,
a lot of water.
You're responsible for the drought.
Pretty much. Thank goodness it's been raining.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got onto that lickety-split, and the guy was like, 63-year-old pipe, galvanized, probably need to replace the whole thing.
Right, yeah.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
So we just did it.
Yeah.
And my life has completely transformed.
So now you don't have the cross piping issue?
No.
Oh my goodness.
I could do washing and flush the toilet and have a shower and fill the kettle.
So you could have done this all along.
All along. It's just so exciting. I literally squealed in delight. It was like a little girl squeal.
Congratulations, my darling. That's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
See, that's totally adulting right there.
That's adulting. Although you just hit upon a trigger point for me without realizing it.
Oh, no.
Our granny flat plans are being stalled by a water pipe issue.
Oh, no.
So you've gotten all the good water pipe karma and we've gotten all the bad water pipe karma.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In the past fortnight.
I'm sorry. I will send good water pipe karma fairiness to your house. How's that?
It'll let's hope it gets resolved.
Maybe you can wash your hands in my good water.
They basically said to us where the connection point is for our existing pipe into the main sewer pipe, so like the street's waste pipe, they're probably going to have to move that contact point, which can be a small job or a big job depending on what they discover when they're midway through the build.
Oh,
so they basically said you may choose to avoid that entirely and move the footprint of the granny flat.
Oh, my God.
Which comes with its own series of, like, flow-on effects.
Unfortunate events.
Yeah, correct. So we're, like, between a rock and a hard place at the moment.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I did not mean to trigger.
Yeah, I know, but it's so
scary.
Funny the way you're like, water, the water pipe.
Honestly, experience with getting stuff done at your house has just been a bit of a nightmare.
Our brief was simple and easy.
Simple and easy. Get mum in
soon.
What
a fool I am.
Oh, my goodness.
Look, it's naivety in some ways. Building just sucks. There's always something that comes along.
Yeah,
so,
that's very true.
You know, who am I to expect that it's all just going to go swimmingly?
Well, you could be swimming in our bath because it fills really quickly now. Like,
that's amazing. It's really funny, actually, because when we did the extension last time, our shower in that extension has amazing water pressure and really good mix of hot and cold, which I know sounds strange. But compared to our old bathroom with the old pipes, it's either like boiling hot or super cold.
Oh.
And the equilibrium to get the balance right is like a
very
fine. Sort of like, oh, it's like a, what's the saying?
Safe cracking kind of operation. Like,
yes,
really get
safe cracking. That's exactly what it's like. If you go a millimeter too much to the hot, it goes boiling hot.
Oh my goodness.
Or super cold. So it probably, and we had that when we first moved in and we thought, oh, this is just this house. It just is very kind of sensitive. And then in the new extension, it's like, no, I'm a mixer tap that understands how to mix the water properly. And in the old one, it's like,
yeah,
I do not understand. Anyway. This is not what we came to talk
about.
No, it's
not.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is my excitement.
Yeah.
What we are here to talk about is sex and how we talk about it to our kids.
Yes.
I know. Because big, big, big news in our house.
Mm-hmm.
Small one got a pimple.
My goodness.
And you know, just looking at her almost 10-year-old little self,
wow.
We just kind of went, oh, this is actually probably closer than we think.
Yeah.
And so.
So how old is she sort of to the month?
She will be 10 in May.
Wow.
Yeah.
9 3/4.
9 3/4, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, this magical pimple situation kind of made us go, wait a minute, this is going to happen. And I don't know that we're as prepared with her as we would like to think. I mean, right. I am a complete oversharer, as we know. But you know, picking up bits of oversharing doesn't make a whole picture for a person.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I went straight to the bookshop and got Kaz Cook's Girl Stuff,
mm-hmm.
The younger version, which is the 8-12 version, because they have she has a 13+ version.
Yep.
And so got that book, and then of course, you know, you can't just get one thing for one child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So picked up something that I'd heard about ages ago called The Amazing True Story of How Babies Are Made,
mm-hmm.
for small two.
Mm-hmm.
So they both got a book each. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Thus began the sort of more formal proceedings.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about sex, baby.
Exactly.
And puberty.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So I am looking for your
Did your little youngest appreciate the How Babies Are Made?
Very much so.
Yeah.
They both really did. And, uh-huh. you know, funnily enough,
yeah.
Graham came to stay,
uh-huh.
not long after this book purchase, and uh-huh. the kids were delighted
yeah.
to be able to get Graham to read the book.
Oh.
And,
just to teach her something she needs to know too.
Quite literally, yeah. she's like, I learnt stuff. Which is just beautiful. But it's an Australian book.
So it's by Fiona Katauskas.
Yes, exactly. And I'd heard her talk about it on, I think it was on Richard Feidler's Conversations mm-hmm. or some mm-hmm. such stuff.
Yeah.
And
yep.
so when I went to get this Girl Stuff book, I was like, wow, I can do that. And you've just opened to the mirror portion of the program of the book.
I'm flicking through the book. Well, first of all, on the front cover, it has a little picture of a sperm and an egg smiling and saying, I think we'll be perfect together.
Naturally.
Which is very cute.
Very cute.
That's what my ovaries are saying when I look at Brad Pitt at the Oscars still. But then I'm flicking through and I opened a page of a little girl with a mirror examining her bits.
Yeah.
Which is that is very kind of like 2020, I feel.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, as far as sex ed goes, it is not just the talk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there was a time when there was like a birds and the bees talk and you got the talk at a particular appropriate time in your life. And
yeah.
now I think we're much more about having a continual conversation about
yes.
all of these things.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
that it's not so intimidating and so, you know, full on.
This is really good.
I'm glad you're enjoying the book.
I'm so sorry.
Rachel's not listening to me.
I too, I think I've also, yeah, I'm learning something, guys. I do like the little expedition.
Yes.
Happy little eggs in the ovary, off on an expedition down the fallopian tubes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just a really descriptive thing of the penis going into the vagina.
Yeah.
And
but the delightful thing about this book is
yeah.
that it also talks about the amazing true story of how babies are made if they're not made
uh-huh.
that way.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which
yes.
I think older books kind of miss out on.
Yes.
You know, there's so many people who have got, you know, fertility challenges.
Yeah.
And so to have a conversation in that book about how, you know, different babies are made.
Yes.
Yeah. Is a really lovely thing as well.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, my God. And there's a birth picture, which is way more realistic than any film has led us to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all in cartoon, like all drawing illustrations,
yeah, a cesarean,
not like
one, and a vaginal birth.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
popping on out.
Gran definitely learnt something from reading this book.
Oh my goodness. Early babies as well.
Yeah.
You premise. Know that Bluey episode of Early Baby?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's cute. It's
is
just
it?
One where they're at kind of at the play, whatever it is that they go to,
yeah.
with Megan Washington as the
oh, I love her.
What's her name? Calypso.
Calypso.
They're at the Calypso place and they're just playing this game about like having an early baby.
Aww.
And I'd listened to something somewhere where one of the writers or the main developer or guy or whatever
yeah.
was talking about having an early baby.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they kind of built it into that Bluey episode to be like, some babies come early and they're in a little box for a little while and you have to take extra good care of them.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, okay. And you'll have to watch it. Homework.
Yes, Homework, Bluey, which is now on Disney Plus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you from, you know, and I think our listeners will probably want to hear from you from a professional clinical psychologist perspective about the sex talk sex conversations throughout all of a kid's life.
Yes. Mm. Now, we touched on this a bit in the Grease episode, didn't we?
Little tiny bit, yes.
Yeah, because I remember kind of getting on a big kind of rant about, like, sex education happens early and continuously.
Yes.
And that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's why these kind of books are really great, because just having these sorts of things around and mixed in with the other sorts of storybooks and things that we have is the best way to kind of introduce those sorts of things.
Yeah, because they're just there.
Yeah.
So that it's not, you know, unusual or different or something to be.
Yeah. You know, and I think that it's about sort of making it age appropriate. Oh, my God, this one is a pop-up book. Sorry.
Rachel is reading all the books that she's found at op shops and things like that.
I'm getting distracted.
So How Was I Made, a first book about sex. How we was have I the made? Classic, Where Did I Come From?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So let me tell you my story and then I'll go back to the professional rant.
Okay, please
I promise,
do.
I promise.
Please do.
Because I have in front of us these two companion books, Where Did I Come From and What's Happening to Me.
Oh.
And they are published in, let's see if I can flick through. I don't think that you can buy these anymore.
Oh.
Because copyright 1977.
Wow, it's as old as me.
For Where Did I Come From, which makes sense.
It's as old as me. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was made at the same time as you. And I'm just going to have to, like, take some little pictures and post some parts of this book, because what actually happened is that my mum never had the sex talk with us.
Right.
But there was this video version of Where Did I Come From?
Uh-huh.
And so it's basically the same book and cartoon, except that it was on the video, on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember the main thing is that they said penis.
Penis.
They said man has penis. It's like peanuts without the T.
Oh, interesting.
Just in case you didn't know how to say penis.
Penis.
Look, it was American.
Oh.
Penis.
Oh, a penis.
Penis? Yeah. I mean, we don't really say penis, do we?
No.
Yes. And I remember there was this little kind of like comic book sperm who had a top hat.
Oh.
Because he was going to go out dancing and have a good time.
Wow. There you are.
There you go. There's the sperm with the top hat.
Oh, my goodness. And on Valentine's Day, he's got a rose and a love heart. Everybody will have to post
that. Okay, that's going to have to be the picture for the episode.
Mm.
And then What's Happening to Me is all about puberty.
Ah.
So, you know, which is more just about the pimples and the things and the changes and what happens to you when you get hair and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I'm just going down a real sort of like nostalgia trip here. Well, I mean, here's a good one too. Testosterone and estrogen are dancing.
Oh, they're having a great time.
They're having a boogie.
In their skinny jeans.
And they're mixing it up.
But I mean, this was so many of our childhoods. So many of our childhoods was this whole Where Did I Come From book, right?
Yeah.
In Australia in particular. I would love to hear from any of our friends who are listening overseas who can let us know what your experience was. But this particular book was everywhere.
Yeah.
And yes, the video was everywhere.
Yes.
I got neither of them.
No.
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 My sister got the video.
Uh-huh.
I got nothing.
Right.
I got my sister.
And did she live up to the task of sex education for young Nicole?
Well, I have four children, so I'm assuming that something worked out okay.
Something worked out okay.
Too funny. But yeah. I know that my sister was sat down with the video.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to ask her about that, actually.
Right.
But yeah, but it was like the talk kind of thing, you know.
And did you own it or did mum just borrow it off someone?
No. That was definitely like a go to the video store and rent that movie.
Rent that movie.
Mm.
Sit her down. Mm-hmm. There you go. Tick that box.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's how it used to be.
Yes.
If at all.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that, I mean, if Leave It to Beaver or whatever I'm thinking of, I don't know, Happy Days. I'm thinking like 50s, 60s, right? How was sex education done?
Yeah.
I think it was more typically birds and bees, right?
Yes.
Which I don't fully understand.
At school, in like a half hour thing.
I don't think I really understand how birds and bees procreate.
Yeah, they don't. That's just wrong.
So I feel like that sort of mid-century was all about birds and bees, and then as we got into the kind of 70s, 80s, it was a little bit more, let's try and be, oh yeah, don't forget about the stork. There was the stork as well,
oh,
right?
Yes.
And then it seems like this was quite revolutionary at the time when these sorts of books were just kind of like very matter-of-fact, like here is a nude body.
Yeah.
Here is people in bed. This is what goes into what. And I'm guessing that there started to be sort of education for parents kind of saying that this is really helpful that you use the right words for things and that you just kind of try and be matter of fact about how all of it works.
Yeah.
And
there are particular reasons for that as well, aren't there?
Yeah.
So using the correct anatomical words is really important to actually for kids' safety as well.
That's right. And I think I did talk about that in the last episode a fair bit.
And I'm reiterating.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's a really important point. But I think probably the thing I want to pick up from our last conversation was about sex positivity.
Yep.
Because after I left, I was kind of thinking about that, like, you know, especially because Greece, and we were talking about kind of, you know, Rizzo being kind of like not ashamed about, you know, her sexual desires and what she wants to do and what feels good for her.
Yeah.
Is that I feel like, look, I don't know if these books help make sex and sex talks positive necessarily, but I think just talking about things like pleasure.
Yeah.
Is really important in terms of kids being introduced to this idea of why would you want to do this in the first place?
Yeah.
Now, having said that, you know, it's kind of interesting because kids will have sort of some sexual feelings inside of their private parts from an early age. They know that it feels nice and all of that kind of thing.
Yep.
I think what's really tricky is that the fear with this education is that we're almost like, you know, that stupid thing where it's like we're going to teach children about sex and give them ideas.
Fill their heads with ideas.
Yeah, as though if I'm going to sit down my six-year-old and sort of say this is how it all happens, that they're then going to go off to school and grab the nearest person they see and be like, would you like to try and make the baby?
It's just not something that happens.
It's just not something that happens.
Nope.
Whatsoever.
And you posted something really good. I liked what you posted on our Facebook page, actually.
I did too. I'll give you some time to try and find that.
Yeah, just that having a talk with your kids about sex doesn't make them have sex. Having a talk about llamas doesn't make them llamas. Having a talk with your kids about suicide won't make them suicidal. Having a talk with your kids about mental illness doesn't give them mental illness.
Yeah.
It does, however, give them the tools to help recognize things that might otherwise confuse or terrify them. Mm. It may help them to recognize things in themselves or in their friends, and that can save a life.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because sex is all around us.
Yes.
As well, is llamas
as
and mental
llamas.
Health and all the rest of it.
Llamas are really big right now. Really big.
My daughter has a llama on her pajamas.
She has llama pajamas?
She has llama pajamas.
Oh, Big Two has the Easter Bunny brought Big Two.
Yes.
These pajamas that had three... No, more than three. Five llamas and then a chameleon.
Oh.
Because it was llama, 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 chameleon. Which the Easter Bunny thought was hilarious.
And did he think it was so funny?
You know, he stifled a giggle, I think, just to be kind to the Easter Bunny, even though the Easter Bunny was no longer around.
Do you think that's why llamas have gotten so big, just because it's a really pun-worthy word?
Yes, yeah. I think it probably helped. But
anyway, we digress.
We do digress.
We do. Sex is as normal as llamas.
Yes.
Children see llamas and want to say, what is that freaky looking animal
yeah.
with the long neck and the furry skin, and where does it come from, and why is that a llama?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, sex is natural and all around us and happens, and their
bodies, it's how they exist, right?
That's correct.
That's the reason they're there for mm-hmm. the most part.
Yeah.
And the idea that you have continual conversations means that there's never, while it's always going to be slightly awkward,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, these are your kids and they don't want to think about the whole they exist because you had sex thing.
Yes.
It's super important to just normalize and make unashamed and, you know, just put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then they will come, they will hopefully come to you when things are, you know, on their mind, when they've got questions.
Yes.
They will come to you.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, I do kind of understand. I get that it's dicey because my kids are, my oldest are 8 mm-hmm. and then I've got the nearly five-year-old. And I do kind of get that thing of like, oh, like you want to normalize it, but I don't want to go so far as to be, you know, again, you want to be sex positive.
Mm.
This is likely to be an enjoyable thing for you.
Mm.
But when you are ready,
yes,
and interested, and that you can explore on your own by yourself without doing anyone too much harm,
mm-hmm.
and eventually you may feel that you are old enough and big enough,
emotionally mature enough,
invite someone else into those acts. But, you know, what's interesting is that I think that one of the reasons why it's really safe to have these conversations in the primary school years is because kids, by and large, are going through a developmental phase where they're very ick and aversive to anything to do with the opposite sex.
Yeah. Girl germs, boy germs.
Because little, like, preschoolers are not too bothered about boy germs or girl germs.
No.
They're just like, they're kind of, they just see other children as kind of, that's someone that I play with.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of, my little guy sort of for ages was having fantasy ideas about marrying his best little buddy, who was a girl. I don't know why I need to mention that, because he can have fantasies about marrying a boy.
Mm-hmm.
But damn it, he's probably going to be straight. And he would just, like, now that he started school, he's fallen in love with another little girl.
Oh.
And he's all like, I think I'm going to marry her.
Oh, that's cute.
And so he kind of has this weird, like, crush that is not in any way sexual.
No, of course
but,
not.
But, like, it's that whole template of, like, I see mummies and daddies doing loving things toward one another.
Yep.
And while that's not something that, like, I'm into, it's sort of like, one day we're going to live together in a big house. Mm. It's kind of like the job. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yes. Yeah.
They just play act what that may look like. And that's why it's pretty common for kids to kind of play act what sex or body parts may look like or may be like.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, the doctors and nurses type behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Show me yours and I'll show you mine.
Mm-hmm.
Is all completely normal as they're trying to figure out what all of this stuff is.
Yeah.
You can give them this book that shows all of the bits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a penis.
Yeah.
They'll look down at their penis and go, yeah, that kind of looks like the one in the picture.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they also want to look at other people's penises and be like, just checking.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, oh, does that kind of look the same as well?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this idea of, like, fear of sexualizing young children, I mean, it's as though
we're putting adult ideas on kids' heads.
That's
right. They don't have those.
They don't see it in that same way.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, Big Two was really funny. He was like, he had 5 girlfriends when he was at kindy, but he, you know, he knew that he could only marry one of them.
Uh-huh.
Like, he was
okay,
very clear.
He's not a Mormon,
but he was also very clear from a very young age that he wanted his own wife and his own house and his own kids and his own dog. Like, it was a life ambition, not a job ambition.
Right.
That was his kind of life ambition.
Yes,
And that real craving for independence and having that life himself.
Gotcha.
And it's funny because that's who he is. Like, he's somebody who craves that independence very much so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because my little guy's kind of like that too.
Yeah.
He doesn't care what job he's going to be, but he knows who he wants to marry.
Mm.
He knows how he wants to feel.
Yes. Yeah. And what a lovely thing to think.
I know. Isn't that funny?
It is. It's delightful.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about kind of introducing it from a young age. Mm. But when you get to those actual puberty years, there are resources that you can kind of tap into.
Yeah.
Kaz Cook, like I said, has that girl stuff, and she has a small one and a bigger one.
Yeah.
I believe there are resources for boys going through puberty.
I can't think of a good boy one.
I never got them for big one or big two. I mean, the conversations that we kind of have had as grown kind of bigger kids, particularly around sex, was all around, you know, consent and safety, I think. Because you've had those conversations prior about, you know, mechanics and about emotional maturity, and that this is something that you do when you're in a, you know, a committed kind of loving relationship. And it doesn't have to be, but it's, I guess I put a judgment on that to my kids, rightly or wrongly, that it's better when it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's me as a parent putting that judgment on. And I suppose, you know, now that I think about it, is that necessarily the right message? But anyway, but that idea of consent has been drummed in.
Yes.
You know, enthusiastic yes. And that's for the boys and the girls and my nephews. And, you know, like, it's, very much about that kind of making sure everybody is on board.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of books out there.
In that puberty space?
There are a lot. And, you know, personally, because my kids aren't there yet, I haven't interacted with them. But this is the time when I need to start knowing what they are and what's out there. But actually, now that I'm saying this out loud, I'm aware of the Kaz Cook ones.
Yeah.
And I'm also aware of Yumi Stimes.
Oh, yes, the period book.
Yeah, it's like Welcome to Your Period, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think came out last year, and she's written it with a doctor.
Yes.
Like, I think a GP or an MD or something.
Yeah.
Which sounds really awesome because, again, Welcome to Your Period is about saying, like, this is a really positive thing, and isn't it amazing that this is what happens with girls' bodies?
Yeah.
And it might just be that because I'm a girl, and, you know, I'll put my hand up and say I consume more female voices in my life, probably.
Yeah.
I haven't heard and come across so much that happens in the boys' space.
Yeah, that's true. Me too.
So maybe that's a little bit of homework for us to kind of think like, or we would love it if anyone could tell us that there's something they would recommend that they think is good for boys.
I mean, as far as in the parent space, there's like Raising Boys by Steve Biddulph, and he's also done the Raising Girls one now.
Yeah.
And there's I'm sure I saw something from our local bookshop, Avid Reader, about so congratulations, you've got a teenager or something.
Right.
Something like that. There's a book around, you know, around that kind of space as well. Because I think it's often very easy for parents who get in their busy lives to forget what that felt like.
Yes.
Paul's really good at this. He says to me, don't you remember what this felt like when you were blah, 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 blah.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I think you almost as a parent try to forget those those times, because teenagering is complicated and confusing and so many questions and so much uncertainty in your brain, and there's hormones and there's, you know, life choices that you're making for school subjects to then, you know, for the rest of your life kind of thing. That pressure is really high.
Yeah.
And I guess I've kind of tried to go, let's just block out the bad bits and remember the times when I was like singing in the choir. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is that, like, while we advise parents that they need to talk about sex with their kids and make it normal and natural, like, we need to honour that there's a lot of people who have experienced sexual trauma.
Yes.
And that that makes it immediately something that is difficult for you to put words around.
Mm.
And to know where's the line between, like, I'm not going to sit my teenager down and be like, this is around the age when I was raped at a party.
Yeah, golly.
But, you know, that if that has been part of your story and your experience, how does that not be top of mind when it comes to that age? And when that's not completely resolved, you think, well, I either have to say nothing about it or, you know, because otherwise I'm afraid that the entire story is going to leak through, which is probably not kind of appropriate or helpful for the child. So
That's a really good point, though. I mean, do parents share that? Should parents share those kind of stories that is that, golly, that's tough.
It's a great question. Well, also I want to say it, you know, one in six women have experienced, and all of us have experienced sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
One in six have experienced a sexual assault, which could range from kissing, touching, penetrative sex. It could be all sorts of different things. But what is called an assault is something that is non-consensual and, you know, an assault on your physical body.
Yep.
Oh, they also do count things like revenge porn, like the sharing of sexual images as a sexual assault.
Yes.
Because it's an assault on your reputation and your sense of identity and your ability to move freely in the world.
Yes, and your autonomy as a human being.
And they say that one in six is likely to be an underreport because, like, you know, because of shame and silence and, you know, the secrecy and all of that kind of stuff.
And process really difficult and challenging.
That's right.
So,
and men, you know, men's stats are slightly lower, but they think that the underreporting is even more of an issue when it comes to men. So, okay, so the broad question is like, how is it that I have that conversation? How much do I disclose? I'm going to do a bit of a get out of jail free card, but also a sell for go speak to a professional about this is something in my case that I'm struggling with because this is what my mind floods me with when I want to approach this topic because I think that it's going to be an individual different answer for each individual.
Sure. And depending on how much of the processing you've done yourself, I suppose, as to whether you're then able to comfortably without sort of re-traumatizing yourself having those conversations
and because I think it's not just about how do I have the conversation, it's also about how do I sit with my child's own feelings of confusion or distress or harm, and how do I know which is my stuff coming through and what is their stuff is a very kind of individual thing. And, you know, but I have I do have these conversations with parents in session, where a lot of the time when I see a teenager, one of the reasons why I like to have contact with the parents, and it's different for each case. Sometimes I'll work mostly with the young person. Some psychologists will only see the young person and never see the parents. Yes. I don't really agree with that.
No.
Because they live most of their life with that parent.
Yeah.
And adolescence, you know, goes up until 25. Like, we're still needing those support people in our lives to help provide stability and what we call a secure base in the infancy literature that we still need as we get older. We still need our parents to kind of be like
the safe place to fall.
I'm here to catch you. So whatever it is that's going on for them, I always try and find a way to be like, for the young person, how can we find a way to communicate what it is you're going through to the parent? And when we get to that stage, it's quite often that I see the parent kind of sort of freezing up or looking a little bit kind of taken aback, and basically it's just they're triggered. I didn't know what was going on for you because that reminds me of something I've been through, and that means that that's why there's this impasse between us that we can't talk about it. And when I see that, I'll usually kind of say to the parents, let's have a private chat for ourselves and try and answer that question. You know, they'll say, how much is going to be helpful?
Yes.
I think that it's age appropriate. It's like with sex. It's all about age appropriate, right?
Yeah,
for sure. What's going to be helpful for them to know at that point in time.
Yeah.
You know, and so I do think by and large it's really healthy for the parent-child relationship for the parent to be honest and transparent about the fact that I was in your shoes once and life wasn't exactly the same as what you're going through, but here are some shareable stories that illustrate for you what it was that I went through and whether I made the right decisions or the wrong decisions, why it is then that I care so much about what you're going through at the moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I wish I had known at this age because I could have had a much easier time. And so here's my wisdom. Like, not just here's what you should do.
Yeah.
But here's what I learned in my own experience that I've gained this wisdom. Kids relate to that message so much more than just being lectured to.
Yeah, well, my mum's thing is always take an old fool's advice.
Take an old fool's advice. Yep, oh, yep, my God. Yep. You reminded me of something I keep saying to my kids at the moment.
Yeah.
Because they'll be like, how do you know? And I'll be like, 39 years is how I know.
Yeah.
You're only 8 years.
Oh, my gosh. I said this morning, 42 and a half years to big one. This morning. Literally this morning. That's so funny.
It is funny.
But it's true. I mean, yeah. You know, yeah. Youth is wasted on the young, as they say. There's a reason for that. Because it's true. If I knew all the things now that I knew then.
Yeah. Oh. And, of course, they want to know our qualifications, don't they? Like, who are you to tell me what to do?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's the answer, is, like, filling in that gap of, like, not only do I have some knowledge that you don't know, but this is how I gained it.
Yeah.
And I gained it through positive experiences of when I succeeded it as much as when I failed or when something bad happened to me or whatever it is.
Yes, indeed.
So I think that kind of stuff is really helpful for teenagers to know from their parents.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Because, you know, understanding that your parents had a life before you and that they existed as humans beforehand is really kind of helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually one of the core developmental tasks of adolescence as well.
Mm.
Because kids do just see their parents as kind of like some figure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like a cardboard cutout of a person.
Mm.
And that's normal because they're not supposed to kind of like sit there wondering and analysing who is this person. Yeah. They're just like, that's mum. She's mum.
Yeah.
My token of mum is how a mum should be. This is the mum.
Yeah.
And then it's really painful as you get older and your brain develops and you see other types of things going on that you're like, hang on a minute. She's not a cardboard cutout. She has layers. And as they learn like a parfait. She's an onion. She's Shrek.
She's a parfait.
She's a parfait. I'd rather be a parfait. Donkey and Shrek, just in case you didn't pick
it up. If anyone didn't pick that up, that's where we're going.
Because as they're discovering the parfait within themselves in adolescence, it helps to be able to – they're questioning the parfait of the parent.
Yeah.
So it really helps for you to be able to say, this is my layers.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting as you get older to start seeing more of your – parents' layers as well, and going, well, you know, how did my mum and dad navigate this particular part of my adolescence or my siblings, you know?
That's right.
Carries on.
Yeah.
Talking about you, Kylie.
Yeah.
It's all right. She doesn't listen. It's fine. But as a bit of a wrap up.
Yes, my darling.
Get in early. Have a chat. Have these things lying around as books that you can kind of just pull out and have
And I need to also do a little shout out. Speaking of the sexual assault stuff, is that the best book I think I've come across is Everybody Has a Bottom.
Right.
Because it talks about private parts.
Right.
Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good one.
Yeah.
And there's another really good one that's called Pantosaurus.
Pantosaurus.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there are some really good books in that space, which I also recommend. Because Everybody Has a Bottom one, I knew about that. And then when we're at the library one day, I was thumbing through the books and I was like, oh, I'm just going to chuck that one into the mix.
Yeah.
And it's humorous and the kids think it's really funny.
Oh, you put bottom in anything. You put bottom in a title. They're all over that.
The cat runs around naked and then they start talking about like, well, the cat has a body and the cat is naked and the cat's not covered up and the cat licks its bits. And then everybody has those bits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that while we're teaching them about sex and about their bodies, we're also teaching them about boundaries.
Yes.
And that is the part that says, this is healthy, it's all normal, you're probably not going to want to go and do the sex thing when you're in that boy germ, girl germ, because they do, there's that built in, it's built into our biology to have a little bit of an ick around that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Grooming, when it comes to sexual assault, is designed to overcome the natural ick factor within the child.
Right.
Just in case you wanted to know about that, going on and on. But, you know, status and being able to flatter someone and all of that kind of stuff, the grooming that happens is designed to overcome the child's natural impulse, which is usually to be like, oh, ick, I don't want to go near those things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so damaging, sexual abuse, because someone is psychologically overriding the child's natural impulse to be like, I think we stay away from those
things.
Not
for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're giving something that is, allowing that access to occur, which makes it very sad.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's the grooming that causes the most long-lasting harm.
the psychological stuff leading up to. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it is something like Harvey Weinstein said that, like, my career was going to be amazing, and that, like, he would it's the threats as well.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the grooming that, like, reels you in, and then the threats that keep you there.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't tell anyone because my entire career would be over, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We will wrap up.
We will wrap up. And I will edit the 59 minutes that we are now at.
Oh, no.
I know. So go grab something from the library for the kids, or grab from your local bookshop, because there's lots of great resources and you will enjoy them as well.
Yes.
I particularly enjoyed reading The Amazing True Story of How Babies Are Made to the Kids. It was really
very
fun.
Cute.
And yeah, Mum genuinely was like, I learnt stuff.
Yeah.
So I
yeah.
think that's delightful.
Yes.
You know, when
yes.
you're
We recommend that. We recommend Girl Stuff, Cass
yes.
Cook.
Yes, absolutely.
And we get to find a boy one, but
we look forward to your recommendations about that, guys. We appreciate your help with that.
Alrighty.
And so next time we're going to talk about
Tangled.
Tangled. So if you want to play along, everybody,
yes.
You can watch Tangled on Disney Plus, or you can get a DVD out, or whatever you want. But yes, Tangled is the Rapunzel kind of remake that Disney did many years ago.
Correct.
Mandy Moore plays the Rapunzel character.
She does.
She does. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're going to talk all things Tangled and interesting parental relationships.
No, we'll try not to sing.
I don't think that we can avoid singing. It's something that we just kind of come to naturally. So until next time,
kiss your babies
and hug them too.
Yeah.
And be kind to yourselves and each other, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks, Nick.
Bye.
Bye.